Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Yeah.
So yeah, like we went more like action-y, like action movie.
That's
like
kind of what I was
time.
Going for.
Maybe we should just, we should do like a different voice each episode. Like, welcome to Grounded Geeks, like a spa voice one time. Anyway, so we could.
You know, eventually I'm going to end up with like Italian pizzeria, right?
That's...
This is a Grounded Geeks.
Okay, that's probably offensive.
It probably is, but you know what? I'm going to, it's just going to end up happening if this is something that we do.
I mean, I'm down, whatever. All right, Aman, what are we talking about today?
So, it's probably a little overdue, but we're going to make it not overdue. Apple TV Plus created a series called Foundation, based on the series of books by Isaac Asimov, truly a, you know, a must read for anybody who's a science fiction fan. You know, any of his books, really.
I sadly haven't read his books.
That's pathetic.
I know.
You need to fix that.
Has he written short stories, right? He has.
He has, yes.
I maybe have read some of his short stories. I cannot recall. That's really bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm outing myself. I'm outing myself right now.
What are you even doing on the show, Lena?
I know. You don't even go here. Really don't.
So anyways, Apple TV came out with a show called Foundation, which is based on the series of books by Isaac Asimov. The brief sort of overview of the show and the books is that the entire galaxy is ruled by a single empire. And one guy who develops a science, or really matures a science called psychohistory, and based on that, determines that the empire is in decay and will collapse. Mm-hmm. And the galaxy is going to fall into barbarism for 30,000 years. That's his prediction. However, this guy has a plan to limit that era of barbarism to 1,000 years. And he sets in motion a plan to lay the seeds of a second galactic empire.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there you go. And I think the show takes a lot of liberties with what's in the books, but some of those liberties I thought were really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah. So I haven't read the books or anything. I really enjoy shows in general that do cool things with time. And I really enjoy shows that like take a really big picture view of things. So, and obviously this one did, I think this spans like 1,000 years, maybe more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does the same in the books, right? Like it covers a long period of time.
Yeah. So like literally the prologue of the third book is like, it's kind of like a recap of the first two books. And it's like Foundation and Empire, tell the story of the first 300 years of the Foundation.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed the show. I thought the entire concept of empire was fascinating, how it's like this one guy and they've just been cloning the DNA of the same guy.
Yeah.
Like over and over. And there's like three versions of him always at all times. That's super weird. And so I think it was a little confusing at first, but the show did a good job of explaining like how much time has passed, even though they're using the same actors.
Yes.
But it's like different people, whatever. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. And it wasn't in the books.
Yeah. That part wasn't in the books.
No, it wasn't, which I actually saw the show before I read the book. So that really surprised me as well, because it was such a key part of the show. I was like, and it was such a novel idea, I thought, that it shocked me when I was like, oh, this isn't in the books?
Yeah.
What?
Wait, so what is Empire in the books?
It's just an intergalactic empire.
Yeah, but is it, do they talk about like the specific leader? Like, is there an emperor or something?
Yeah, there is an emperor, but you know, it's a dynasty. It's a regular.
So it's just a regular, like his son and his, or, yep, or his child, yep, or whatever, you know?
A regular old dynastic empire.
Who came, yeah, up with this? The weird cloning and having three versions of the same person living at the same time, but at different ages. Like, who, yeah, came up with that?
Like, I don't know, but well done. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done, person who came up with this idea.
Because that, I feel like that also fit with the futuristic, you know, setting of this story. You know,
yes,
it obviously takes place in the future, some distant future. And I feel like humans would do that, you know, someone in power would be like, I think it's a great idea to clone myself and only, right, I should be ruling forever and ever and ever.
I'm like, the only one competent enough.
Yeah. Not to... even my offspring will be competent. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And... But, you know, it really made me think about how a lot of science fiction drives scientific discovery and, mm-hmm, scientific advancements. But at the same time, science fiction writers are often limited by the science of their times.
Yeah.
So Isaac Asimov, when he's imagining the future, he's imagining the implementation of nuclear technologies in all sorts of sort of weird and novel ways. Okay. But it's still nuclear technologies, because in Asimov's time, that was the sort of ultimate of scientific discovery, mm-hmm, even though this is in such a far future that there's no way humanity, you know, 30,000 years from now wouldn't have discovered a more advanced version of scientific of energy. You know,
mm-hmm, yeah,
that greater understanding of the fundamental forces and energies of the universe. So in that sense, his imagination was a little bit limited by the science of his time, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Do we know, like, what time period? Do you happen to know off the top of your head what time period Isaac Asimov lived in?
He died in 1992, I think.
Yeah.
He died in the early 90s. Huh?
When was he born?
I think he was born in the 40s.
Okay.
No, earlier.
No, it has to be
because
earlier.
He came,
yeah,
up with his, he had his first published works in the 60s, I believe.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
Then he's seen a lot. He saw a lot.
He did.
Because,
yeah,
the 20th century is a doozy, similar to the 21st century so far, but yeah.
Yeah. I feel like millennials were always treated as a joke, but at this point we've seen 9/11. And two recessions and a global pandemic.
And maybe on the brink of
World War III.
Or just nuclear war.
We laugh because the alternative is to cry and cower in fear under our desks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess also we wanted to talk about what is happening right now, right? With,
yeah, but before we get into that, one of the things that I did want to touch on is the presentation of psychohistory in Foundation. First, in the
in
TV
Foundation,
show.
In the TV show? Or are you talking about?
So in both, okay, really. But, mm-hmm, in the TV show, they kind of talk, I don't know if you got the sense, but they kind of talked about it like almost like it's mysticism. You know,
sort of, but with math, like, yeah, mysticism, but
they made it
that you can sort of analyze and compute with math.
Yeah,
that's what they made it seem like in the show, for me at least.
Yeah, and after reading the books especially, that annoyed me. All, mm-hmm, right, psychohistory as Asimov describes it, it is very, very mathematical, but what it basically is mob psychology by the numbers. All right. One thing I like to think of it as is a colony of bacteria, let's say, in your stomach. All right. Mm-hmm. If you introduce a particular kind of food, you'll be able to predict how the bacteria in your gut may respond to that. Mm-hmm. However, you may not be able to predict the activities of a single particular bacterium.
Mm-hmm.
you know?
Okay.
And that's how psychohistory works. And that's something that even in the show, they talked about the larger the sample size, the more accurate the results and the predictions, because you're basically trying to predict mob behavior. The bigger the mob, the easier it is to predict its behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's the fundamental basis of it. So in the books, you know, they have that same trial scene that they do in the show, mm-hmm. where they're saying, well, isn't there anybody who can explain it? And the one thing that they did different that Asimov did that was different in the books is that Harry Seldon basically says, well, I mean, I can explain it to anybody who's versed enough in the mathematics of this field, mm-hmm. you know, like he was just portrayed as somebody who is a master of this mm-hmm. particular field of science, not sort of a lone individual who's developed something that nobody can understand and is acting as a prophet.
You're saying who did that, the book or the show?
In the show, they made it seem like he was the only one who could possibly right. understand it.
Yeah.
But in the books, this was a field, a burgeoning field mm-hmm. of science, but you know, a relatively new field of science that Harry yeah. Seldon had taken to the greatest extent, but not something that was mystical, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Asimov didn't actually develop a science of calculating mob psychology to predict human civilizational behavior thousands of right. years into the future.
I mean, that would be really clutch.
I mean, that would be clutch at that point. You know, I think as a species, we'd probably be in a very different place by now.
Yeah. And then in the show, Gale, mm-hmm. they kind of portrayed Gale as like this prodigy who could yes. also understand Harry Seldon, right? And like what he's trying to say with psychohistory. And she's somebody
who can understand his mathematical equations.
Right, exactly. So they kind of made it seem like you've got Harry and you've also got Gale and that's it. Like yeah. these are the two people. So going along with the whole yeah. mystical stuff.
Yeah.
In the book,
like something so complicated that literally there's no other human beings that could possibly understand it. But yeah. that's not at all how it's portrayed in the books.
In the book, Gale isn't even a woman, right?
Gale is not a woman. Gale is a man in the books and appears in a total of two chapters, at least in the first book. Mm-hmm. I'm still in the middle of the series, so maybe he'll show up again, but he hasn't yet. And I'm three books in.
Is his name Gale in the books?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Yeah. Gale was originally a man's name.
Yeah. That's another interesting thing that the show did then. Well, yeah. one, turning a male character into a female. I feel like a lot of people are doing that now. Like yes. with Dune, for example, they did that with several characters that were originally male in the book and whatever. And then another interesting thing was making Gale a fairly main character in the show.
Yes. I mean, maybe they're pulling it from somewhere, but I haven't come across it yet in my readings.
Yeah.
And I haven't made it through the entire series yet. So I do have to admit that.
Right. There's how many books? Four, five?
Four or five.
Okay.
Four or five. Right. Yeah. I think there's a prelude mm-hmm. book as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like what George R.R. Martin is doing with his Game of Thrones shows.
Stop it. He's working on a prelude book now when he hasn't even finished the series.
I think there's a prelude series. And yes, he did write a couple of like prelude shortish novellas, but
yeah. he won't finish the original, like A Song of Ice and Fire series.
I'm so annoyed by it at this head. Point. Yeah. I'm
dear,
so annoyed.
Dear listener, I am shaking my head.
Really want to paint a picture for our audience about what's
rolling
happening in this
my
conversation.
Eyes. My eyes have rolled back so far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so
another disappointing old man. Okay.
So where I was going with this whole explanation of psychohistory uh-huh. is that in the books, all right, and you start to see some of this in the show, is that Harry Seldon designs the Foundation, which is this small singular planet of scientists and the circumstances around which it exists mm-hmm. to follow at sort of a faster pace, the evolution of civilizations, mm-hmm. so to speak. So you have the Foundation, which then the entire region collapses. And at least in the books, everybody else forgets how to use and utilize nuclear technologies. All right. Mm. But the Foundation still has it. And they then start to use their knowledge that nobody else has in that region to basically control the worlds in that region by creating a religion around nuclear technologies. Mm-hmm. And then from one crisis to the next, that then forces the Foundation to adapt. And instead of using religion, starts to use economic tools, all right, mm-hmm. to exert their control. And mm-hmm. then from there, really develop a stronger military and stronger military forces as one crisis after another over the course of dozens of decades.
Right.
You know, as these particular points of crisis arise, where the Foundation has to adapt their tools in a particular way, and that particular way being the only way they can adapt if they want to continue and survive. All right. So as I was reading it in the books, I just thought it was very interesting to see this sort of evolution play out in the real world, which obviously reading that stuff, my mind immediately turned to the war in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Say more.
Well, Lena, do you want to tell everybody our personal connection?
Sure. Well, we mentioned this very briefly in our last episode, but Aman and I grew up moving around a lot. And one of the places we lived in the late-ish 90s was mm-hmm. Ukraine. And yeah. we lived in the capital in Kyiv for 2 years. It was like 96, 97, those years. So we moved there 5 years after Ukraine became its own country. And it
after the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. And it was very apparent. Like at the time, you know, like I was 7 years old at the time. I clearly did not even know what the Soviet Union was. And
right.
So, but when I think back on my memories of like just what I saw just walking around in the city, that, you know, that I can like tell that, you know, it was Ukraine was still a country at that time, you know, picking itself up and right. building itself. And yeah. So yeah, we have this personal connection to Ukraine. So that's the news that's coming out of Ukraine right now is definitely hitting different, I think, than it would for, you know, a country that we obviously didn't have a personal connection mm-hmm. to. So yeah, it's been really all around messed up what's happening.
Yes. Yes, it has. And so, you know, obviously we wanted to figure out a way to talk about what's happening. And then I had the brilliant idea of tying this to Foundation. So although what we're about to talk about is really academic, I think it's just really important for everybody to know how much we are like personally affected by what's happening.
Yeah. Well, and, I wouldn't say we are like personally affected right now.
You know, how but it's like, hitting us in such a personal kind of way because we've lived there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Ukraine will always be a country that's important to both of us. We both have very, very fond memories mm-hmm. of living there, of our friends there, friends that we made there, school and everything. So,
So going back to making the geek world relevant here, what is happening, not in Ukraine, actually, but in Russia right now? Really, it struck me that there were so many parallels. Mm-hmm. I was seeing a lot of parallels between what's happening right now in Russia and the way the Empire's history played out in the Foundation books. You know, the Empire is in decay, and the Emperor and the core imperial worlds are basically in denial of that fact, and they refuse to accept it. You know, mm-hmm. all while the Empire slowly falls apart around them. And there's even these moves to try to reestablish the old glory of the Empire before these faraway provinces broke away.
Mm-hmm.
you know? So I thought that was very interesting, because in the same way you have the Soviet Union collapse and you have now Vladimir Putin, who's been in power for what, 23 years?
Yeah. Too long.
24 years.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Where he has said, he's on record as saying that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest calamity to ever befall the Russian people. You know, I mean, he's definitely trying to reestablish Russia as a, I would say more than a superpower, but as reestablish Russia as an imperial power. I think that's what it feels like to me. And I think that's a main motivator also behind his invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah.
Because regardless of whatever strategic values anybody wants to talk about with Ukraine's access to the Black Sea, Ukraine's military advanced military technology industry, all right, or the copious amounts of wheat that Ukraine has.
Or fun the fact, nuclear power plants.
nuclear technologies. I mean, fun fact, the Ukrainian flag, the blue and the yellow, represents the sky and the wheat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because Ukraine, I remember learning that in school.
Yeah. Ukraine at one point was known to be, was known as the breadbasket of Europe.
Yeah.
And between Ukraine and Russia, they are responsible for 30% of global exports of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So
I also recently learned that
there's a lot of food there. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is that Russian culture and Russian civilization as it exists, Russian culture and Russian civilization really originates in Ukraine. Before there was ever a Moscow or a St. Petersburg, there was a Kyiv.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Straight up. That's how old it is. So there is a, you know, a cultural and spiritual importance. Mm-hmm. Like if you want to reestablish the Russian Empire, it's good to own the origins, you know? It's kind of
However, the people of Ukraine do not associate themselves as being Russian. They think of themselves as their own, you know, as cultural identity and their own language too. Also, I learned today that the Ukrainian language is actually more similar to Polish than it is to Russian.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, Ukraine and Ukrainian people, it is, they are a distinctly different people in a very distinctly different culture from Russia, Russians, and Russian culture. You know, it is different. And if you've been there, if you've interacted extensively with Ukrainians and Russians, you can sense that difference, that there is a difference there, that you are talking to people from a different country, you know? And, but Ukraine holds this sort of cultural importance, I think, which is what I think is really motivating, has is the real motivation between behind Vladimir Putin wanting to take over Ukraine. You know, so you've got this empire that's in denial. All right. First, there was bargaining under Boris Yeltsin, and then there was anger and denial now happening under Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Now I'm just going through stages of grief.
Yeah. Started off by taking pieces of it, like back in 2014, taking Crimea and all that. Yeah.
Yep.
But now he's just gone full on crazy.
Right. He totally has. And so the next thing, that next parallel that I saw in the Foundation books, something that I touched on already, which is they talk about how the Foundation starts to use trade and economic tools as its weapons of conquest. And if you look at the reactions of the rest of the world, specifically Western Europe and the United States, we're not going in guns a-blazing.
We're going in with sanctions.
Economic sanctions.
Yes.
But not just economic sanctions. A lot of, we're not going to buy your shit anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
and
we're
a lot
not
of businesses pulling
Russian
out.
Oil anymore. A lot. Yeah. McDonald's has suspended operations in its 580 Russian stores.
Yeah. It's crazy. Which, same with Coca-Cola, Starbucks.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
A lot of companies.
A lot of companies are doing that. And part of it is because of, I think Apple suspended its services in Russia, you know? I mean,
oh, and Netflix too. Did I hear that?
Oh, I hadn't heard that one yet.
I just really think if that were, you know, we know for a fact, if something like that happened in America, that is what would create the uprising.
And people would.
People losing their Netflix. And I wonder how similar Russians are in that sense to Americans. Like, will more Russians go out in the streets to protest what Putin's doing?
I think that's pretty much going to go as far as it's going to go. But because at the end of the day, Vladimir Putin is now a full-on authoritarian to the extreme, right? Where it doesn't matter what anybody says, he's going to get his way. Yeah. If anybody in his inner circle opposes him, A, he'll have them killed. But more than that, in that moment, he can ignore them to their face. That's how much control he has in that country right now.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. But the longer this war keeps going on and the worse it looks for Russia and the Russian military, the higher the likelihood is that there's going to be another revolution.
Wait, in Russia?
In Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's not going to help the Ukrainian people anytime soon.
Yeah. It's not going to help them right now.
It's not going to help them right now. It's not going to help them anytime soon. But economic sanctions, economic tools will continue to have a strong impact on that.
Yeah, eventually. If there was anyone in real life who would do what Empire does in the TV show Foundation, it would be Vladimir Putin. Like, I really would not be surprised if some new intelligence report came out that was like, Vladimir Putin has been researching for the past decade on how to clone himself. Like, you know, 1000% he would be doing that, you know? Like,
oh my God. I'm laughing because it's not funny. That could be true.
Right? Like, at this point, I'm like, why not? Sure. Okay. What was I gonna say next? Oh, so also what's interesting, I just keep hearing reports about how what is being reported in Russia about this war that Russia is waging in Ukraine is like like textbook propaganda through and through. On like, they've blocked so many social media sites. They've they blocked every other sort of independent news source from there besides their own state sponsored stuff. And I don't think the TV show that's not true. I mean, they showed obviously in the TV show like a small group of rebels trying to change things. But I wonder, they didn't go into too much detail of like showing what do the masses think of Empire.
Right. But one thing interesting that they did show in the show that I am also seeing in a lot of news reports coming out of Russia, and you have too, is the level of paranoia of the emperor. And I'm applying that both to the show Cleon the Second,
right?
Dawn, Day, and Dusk, and Vladimir Putin. The level of paranoia that they have for their for their own safety, and B, for their grip over their empire. You know, it's really highlighted. You know, when you have extreme authoritarianism, eventually that authoritarian starts to become paranoid that they may lose what they have, you know. And I am just going to come out and say it. Anybody who studies international relations and political science, throw away your pens, break your keyboards. Your work was already done by Isaac Asimov. If you're studying anything that isn't starting off with what he's written, you're wasting your fucking time.
Yeah. Clearly. I mean, it is kind of weird, you know, when we, it's sad because a month ago when we were talking about like, oh yeah, we need to do an episode about Foundation, that show is amazing. Did not think we would be talking about the Russian Empire.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it totally applies, you know, like Isaac Asimov. Wow. Wow, dude.
I mean, honestly, like, so I actually did study international relations in college. All right. And I am like, I'm reading these books and I'm like beating myself that like, why didn't I fucking read these books when I was in college. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Because I could have written a thesis paper using that as my starting point, and it would have been the most brilliant thing ever. All right. But like, seriously, you want to know about how international relations work, how civilizations rise and fall, and the human psychology behind what drives some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. The groundwork is there in Asimov's Foundation books. Mm-hmm. Just read those. All right. You're going to get a jump start on anything you're seeing in a textbook. Yeah. All right. Like, I don't know why I actually did study international relations, and I don't understand why Foundation is not just straight up quoted more in textbooks.
I know,
and by these other IR experts like Ian Bremmer and, you know, whoever else is out there, you know, pretending that they know shit. Okay. Like, why aren't they quoting Asimov's Foundation series more? He lays it all out. And just in watching the news in the last 2 weeks and reading all of these stories that by Russia experts, by regional experts, and thinking back on the history of Russia and the Russian Empire, I'm like, shit, he's right. Like, everything that Asimov wrote in some way, shape, or form is playing out in front of our eyes right now. Like, boy, I had it down. You know, I don't know why the hell anybody's wasting their time at these IR schools anymore. I feel like I wasted my time not having read Foundation.
I mean, so pretty much the reason why we started this podcast, because there is not enough of a dialogue and conversation happening, I believe, in our opinion, between very heavy academic stuff like IR, political science, whatever, and what's happening in the fictional world, you know, and what's happening in fantasy, sci-fi. Like, these, they all do relate to each other. That's the whole point of this podcast. We're making the geek world relevant because it pretty much almost always is relevant. Right. And the geek world does not exist without the real world, because these writers who come up with these stories are drawing on the real world.
And, you know, I mean, to be honest, most of the time I'll read something in comic books, I'll see a movie, and I'll be like, you know, you had a good start there, but you should have picked up another textbook before you finished that script.
Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Like one of the things that annoyed the shit out of me in Batman versus Superman was Lex Luthor's discussion about his monologuing about the existence of God and good and evil and all of that stuff. And it was like, and I have read a fair bit of philosophy in my day, and it just, all of that monologuing felt not real to the character of Lex Luthor, because that whole philosophical argument was so fucking childish. It annoyed me. All right.
Yeah.
So in that sense, a good start. A lot of interest, a start on interesting questions about Superman's existence and godhood. It's blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they don't follow through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isaac Asimov was one of those rare individuals, I think, who really did master the field that he was trying to talk about, you know, whether it's sociology, political science, or robotics for that matter. You know, if you read iRobot, he lays out, in my opinion, the template for the true future of where AI is headed.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't have the vocabulary, and the science didn't exist at his time. So that's why he's still talking about robots rather than in terms that are relevant more to the communication age that we're in now. Mm-hmm. But it's still carries through, you know, it still carries through. If you are interested in where is AI headed, okay, iRobot, that's where you need to go. Read that and you'll see where it's headed. Okay.
And I think many people would argue that it's very different from the movie. There's no relation at all.
I think they use some, I think they use some of the same names.
Oh my God. That's so sad. Wow.
I mean, I saw the movie and it made me interested in the book. And then I saw the movie and I was like, eh, but yeah. I'd already started reading the book and I was like, what is this bullshit? Like, how dare they call this movie I, Robot? Like, what the shit is this?
Wow. All right. Well,
it was so bad.
Well, clearly the biggest thing I'm taking away from this conversation is I need to read Isaac Asimov's books like ASAP.
Yeah, you really should. I mean, I think they're doing a brilliant job with the show, and they really did a good job of taking a lot of the principles that Asimov discusses and putting them into a show and updating the technologies in the show and really doing a good job of using their imagination to be like, well, if Asimov was alive today and was writing Foundation today, what are the kinds of things that he would be doing that are slightly different? For the most part, they did a really good job with that on the Apple TV show. I hope they're able to complete the series to its end.
Yeah, I hope so too.
But if you want to try to make predictions about where this war in Ukraine is going, also read Foundation. You might get some insights.
And on that note, I think that really wraps it up. Well,
sorry, did I steal some thunder from you?
No, you didn't.
Oh, I thought you were about to say something.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry if I interrupted.
No, not at all. I was just going to say this has been actually secretly a like fan podcast episode of Isaac Asimov.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
But yeah, go read his books.
Yeah.
And as always, thanks for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And catch us next week.